This episode of the A-Team is brought to you by FaceToFaceGames.com, Canada's number one source for Magic the Gathering card singles.
But then what happens is in my upkeep, I get a second Rurik Thar that then they're like, holy fuck, we're both over here, man. We both can't be over here, man. One of us has gotta go, man. And then they're like, ah, you gotta kill that guy.
Welcome to the A-Team Podcast, brought to your ears by ManaDeprived.com, home of Canadian Magic.
In 2010, a crack Magic playing unit was sent to prison by the DCI court for crimes they didn't commit. These men promptly escaped from a federal pound-me-in-the-ass prison to the Canadian underground. Today, still wanted by Wizards of the Coast, they survive as podcasters of fortune. If you have a problem, if no one else can help, and if you can find them, maybe you can listen to The A-Team.
KYT.
Sorry, Jay just agreed with Medina. My head exploded.
Jay Boosh.
Is this what it's like to be a brewer? Because that was exciting.
Yeah.
That's what it's like. I take it all back.
Scotty.
I would really like you to, like, come clean. You just mulligan to land elf sword every single game.
And Medina.
So anyways, I had to leave, obviously, because I'm just not going to sit here and watch chicks get naked when there's training to be done.
And now, the A-Team.
Hey, bitches. I'm back with my bros. It's the A-Team. I'm Jonathan Medina. I'm here, as always, with KYT, Jay Boosh, and Scott McCallum. What's up, guys?
What's going on? You've been gone so long.
Welcome
back.
Man.
You were visiting your other family.
I heard that. I heard that last episode. Oh, man. Scott's like, he kills for that. I'm like, that's okay. It's okay if you guys want to talk shit when I'm gone.
All right. Well, at least I said it to you when you're here.
Yeah, I know. You know, you're man enough to step up to it, you know, and I like that.
I appreciate it.
Yeah, so we have a full show today, guys, right?
Holy God! Like, there was a Pro Tour that happened, and there were all of these amazing changes that are coming down the pipe that we can talk about, that everybody's all up in arms about. And you played a crap ton of Magic in your absence.
I played some Magic. Not a crap ton, but I did change my Junk Reanimator deck, so I'm interested to hear your guys' thoughts on it.
Dirty.
Yeah.
KYT, did you do anything productive this week?
No, I decided to get off my ass and play some Magic and gave Flores his latest, well, not really his, but one of the deck he's touting, a try.
Okay, so we can talk about that. Jay,
Flores? Who's that?
Never heard of him. Jay, did you do anything this week?
Nope. I played some cube, I played some golf. It was sweet.
Nice.
Right on.
Yeah.
Then I guess we'll just get the Pro Tour stuff out of the way, and then we can get into, because like none of us were there. I watched coverage and stuff, and that was awesome. Coverage was actually really well done. I felt like it moved very well this time around, so that was pretty sweet. It felt like there was always something to watch, and that was really nice.
I heard people were bitching because, like, what happened was I didn't get to watch coverage, really, because the reason I was in California was to not to visit my second family, to actually visit my family. My brother was getting married.
So
I was like running around, like helping out with the wedding and stuff. And like this was on like day one of the Pro Tour, and then day two you have all the visiting and all that kind of stuff. So you don't like I wasn't like obviously watching coverage because like you know I can't be watching coverage when my dad's like trying to talk to me about life and stuff, you know. But like I kept like checking Twitter from time to time, you know. I would be like, oh yeah, that's a good story. Like I gotta go and use the restroom real quick. Run over there, whoosh, you know, check out my Twitter while I'm taking a piss and whatnot. And I seen that there was a feature match with my boy, which we'll get to, Andrew Shrout. And then afterward, they interviewed him, And then people were getting pissed because they were interviewing him and not showing. I guess there was like a Nassif Chapin match happening. And like people were going nuts because they weren't covering the Nassif Chapin match. Am I off on that, or was that just like Twitter backlash or something?
Oh, I'm sorry. Like Magic community complained about something that happened. No, I'm just kidding. I'm so surprised. Say that so, John.
Did you see the Twitter backlash on that?
No, I didn't. I didn't look at Twitter at all day. Oh, I was just watching coverage and doing my own stuff around that.
Oh man, watching coverage and like watching Twitter while the coverage is happening, like best thing ever.
Ultra meta.
I feel like that's only a half step above actually just reading the Twitch chat.
Oh yeah, I won't do that. That's way out there. So yeah, we had the first showing of Team Legit, you know, and we got no love on the coverage. We got no love.
That's not true.
We got very little love because they did a whole. You seen the like they did like the
zero love, man. Yeah, zero.
The end of day one. BDM yeah, made mention guy, of you like during seven, his wrap-up. Like, straight up named you.
Yeah, after my guy is 7-1, finally, you know, he's like, yeah, Team Legit. But before that, they did, like, a full, like, oh, these are all the teams. And they cover every team. Like, even, like, Team Wild Hair Bullshit or whatever, right? And then they didn't cover my team.
Yeah,
did they cover Team Northern Walker Alliance?
Well, I mean, those teams, like, didn't
want to vote. I think they did.
Yeah, they did.
They covered Doug P's team, so...
Well...
Yeah, they covered Doug P's team. They covered Vanity Pride, obviously, because, you know, we had Alex Hain, you know, in his beastly finish. But yeah, so they cover all these teams. They don't cover my team, right? And you know what? When one of my guys top rated, it's like, suck it. Yeah, there you guys go. Now you have to cover me. How do you like me now?
Well, Andrew Andrew's a hell of a competitor.
Did you see his sleeves at the top eight?
No.
Sneaky bastards, man. Sneaky bastards. Star City.
Oh.
Slipped him some sleeves in the top eight. Did you see that shit, man?
Oh, yeah, I guess that's right.
Yeah, that's kind of, you know, hey.
Well, I don't know. Your Legit logo would look pretty sweet on some sleeves, John.
There's no doubt I need sleeves. After that move, I'm getting sleeves. All right, Star City, just so you know. All right, you're not going to catch me again. I'm getting sleeves.
And but, you should send, like, a case to people like Adam Prozac and, like, all of those other guys in your area that play in all these opens.
Yeah, all my friends who are grinders, I'm just going to start sending them sleeves so on their coverage, you know.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, if you guys want, you know. If you guys want
this
to play,
is
like,
hilarious.
You know, it's just I was like, I'm new to this whole thing, right? I'm new to this whole like team thing, right? I know I'm not a veteran like KYT, you know, having my own team. So I didn't know how important the sleeves were. But now I know, man, that if you don't put sleeves on your guy, you know, Star City Games is going to be creeping around the corner. And they're going to be putting those sleeves on that deck, you know? So I was really happy, all jokes aside. I was really happy to see Andrew top eight, and I was really happy just to have a team. Even though Andrew top eight, I'm really pumped about that. I'm proud of that. And yep.
To make you recap, how did the team form? Was it just specific people you wanted to sponsor, or just to repeat for me as well? Were they people that were planning to work together from the get go? I don't really remember.
So what happened was, three of the local guys won PTQs, and this was Bernie Wynn, Billy Kominos, and a guy we call Lopey.
And these guys are like your friends, right?
Yeah, these are my buddies. We all play Magic together. So like I was really pumped about those three like winning PTQs, you know. Mm-hmm. And I was like, hey, do you guys want to be sponsored? Like, I want to help you guys out, like whatever I can, you know. I'm like, it's a Block Pro Tour. You know, Dragon Maze is coming out, and like typically what will happen is like the Pro Tour is like right after the set release. So it's hard for players to get cards, you know, especially like Mythics, you know. So I'm like, I'll sponsor you guys. Like, I'll get you some sick shirts, and like, I'll, you know, I'll loan you whatever cards you need, and I'll pay you for being on coverage and all this kind of stuff, you know. Mm-hmm. And then like, I'll give you a place to write your tournament report, and I'll pay you for the tournament report, you know. And they were like, yeah, we'll do that. So they got together, and Bernie was kind of leading the team. And Bernie was like, hey, man, we're testing with all these other guys. And he's like, do you want to offer the sponsorship to them as well?
Oh, yeah.
And I said, sure. Yeah, yeah, I'll offer. I said, I'll sponsor up to 5 guys.
That brings back 20.
Yeah, yeah. I'm like, hey, man, my wallet is not that big. I'm like, I'll sponsor up to 5 guys. And so he found another 2, Andrew and Lucas. Those 2 guys wanted to join up. So yeah, so I ordered all these sweet like Nike polo shirts because Bernie was like, dude, you think we can get something different than this like button up Dickie shirt, right? And I said, oh man, you guys are going to the Pro Tour? I'm gonna hook you up with like a Nike like top of the line polo.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. So I ordered them all Nike polos. And then they all just sent me their deck list, and I got them all their decks that they wanted.
What a sugar daddy, love it.
Yeah, yeah, I got them whatever cards they want. I'm just like, you send me the list, man, I'm gonna hook you guys up. At first I was like, I'll give you Dragon Maze cards, but then like I realized like some of these guys, like Andrew, he plays online, you know?
Yeah, he's got no paper.
Yeah, he owns like no paper cards. So it was kind of a shocker at first when they all just started sending me lists of cards. And Bernie was like, he doesn't want to play foils at the Pro Tour, which is like, you know, understandable, but his whole collection is foil. So he's like, you know, he needs a whole deck. So I ended up pretty much giving everyone a whole deck, and which was like, got a little bit tough because like 3 of them were on Voice of Resurgence decks.
Mm-hmm.
So I needed like 12 Voice of Resurgence.
Have you got all those back yet?
No, not yet.
Yeah.
I hope I can get them back. That would be sweet. So yeah, so that's how the team formed. And then, you know, I wanted to do more with the team. I wanted to like, some of these guys, this is their first Pro Tour, so I wanted to do like more drafting practice. But it was really hard to kind of orchestrate that stuff. You know what I mean? Yeah. And plus, like, whenever this happens, like, now that I'm, like, finding out about this team stuff, like, I wanted information, you know? Like, this is the most, like, valuable resource for having a team is information. You know what I'm saying? Like, testing data, you know, like, even just, like, decks, like, looking at deck lists, you know, testing data from, like, the limited format, the draft format and stuff. So, like, I was trying to dig that stuff up myself, and that's really hard to come by, especially when everyone kind of has their place that they work with for the Pro Tour. Like, everyone already is in their teams, you know? So, like, going forward, I think I'm going to start putting things in place to get that information better. You know what I mean? Like, I might, like, hire, like, some of these people who are really good at limited to give me that information. You know what I'm saying? Like, I toyed with the idea of hiring some of the limited, like, pros to just fly them out, like, and sit with my guys and, like, talk about the format and then draft with them, you know? We tried to put some of that together before the Pro Tour, but it fell through. It didn't happen. But yeah, I want to do that kind of stuff with my team as soon as I have another chance, you know?
This guy's ready to game.
Yeah, man. Yeah, yeah. You know, because I like that. I like having team. I like, like, promoting them. I like watching them. Like, I like having someone that I can truly, truly root for, you know? Like, I root for my friends at the Pro Tour, but, like, when you have a team, you're like, oh, man. Like, you want to see them do well, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
You know all about that, right, KYP?
Well, you brought me memories to, like, my very first GP at GP Toronto, where... when you're talking about your conflict with Star City Games, when I wasn't partners with Sal yet, and it's like we were basically fighting for, you know, who like which T-shirt the person would wear.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh man, I remember that. That was hilarious.
And
winks.
So, but it's not like you will. I likely not form partnerships with Star City Games anytime soon. But me, it ended up being a very happy ending. Like, we ended up partnering, so there's not been that type of issue ever since. So I'm happy about that, but it reminds me about that time. But for me, I wasn't a store, I was just a community site, and I was going up against a store, and that was just like, you know, I'm not gonna win, I'm not gonna pay this guy anything because I'm not making anything.
Yeah,
so that was like really, really awkward. But you can say yo, fuck you, I'm making my own sleeves, right? So
Yeah, I'm gonna make my own sleeves. Yeah. After that, that was like, I think that was some bullshit, man, in my book, you know. I understand they want to get the logo out there and they want to promote their brand, you know. So yeah, but whatever. I'm not super caught up on it. All that tells me is get sleeves. Like, that's all that says, you know. But overall, I'm very happy with the teams, very happy with how all that worked out. And it's kind of cool, like, when you talk to the guys, right, and they feel like they're part of something, or when you see them cheering, like, on social media, like Lucas was saying, yeah, Team Legit in top eight, you know, like, just seeing that kind of stuff is it's just cool, you know, not even from like my site is being advertised. It's just cool to be part of something like that, you know, and like that people are feeling like they're part of something. And, you know, you're helping them, and that kind of thing is a good thing. So
yeah, right. So I mean, I don't know, like you've said before, when I don't know if it was off air or on air, that you didn't think content on your site was helping drive substantial business to your card store. Like, do you think this promotion of your team on the Pro Tour, like, it caters to a lot of it doesn't cater a lot to the casual guys, does it? I'm not sure myself.
No, definitely not. Like, I think I said that off air, but it is something that's like, I'll say it on air. Like, I think it's,
well, I've said fuck content on air. So
content, like, to me, it doesn't drive sales. Right. Like, I think if you try to make, you can make content drive sales, right? If your whole website is an ad, like, you know, you can sell things that way. But I don't want my website to be an ad. I want my website to have content, you know? And so that kind of content does not drive sales. And neither does this Pro Tour team. Like, a lot of the, like, people who play in Tournament Magic, they don't buy as much cards as, like, the EDH players or, like, you know, just the random kitchen table guys who are just buying, like, all the mirrors, you know, or all the slivers, or, you know, right, or their artifact deck stuff. So, like, that stuff is not, it's not the kind of stuff that you want to, like, if you're all about sales, then yeah, don't go with a content site. Like, that's not gonna, it's not gonna boost sales. Like, it's not worth it in the realm of sales.
Right.
The reason I do it is because it gives my business a face. You know, it shows people what I'm about as a business owner, and that's important to me. It's important to me that people know that I'm about the community as much as I am about making money on singles, you know? So, like, by kind of, like, sacrificing some of those profits and some of those sales, I'm saying, look, like, I want to be a contributor to this community. I want to do something that's, like, interesting to you and that you're going to benefit from. It's kind of like paying my dues, you know? And then it also, like, when I write on the site and stuff, people kind of get to know me a little bit better by the things that they see on the site. I look at all that content before it goes there. So when they start seeing the stuff form, then they see the kind of people I like to work with. They see the kind of stuff that I want to promote. And they get to know me and the business a lot better. And that's worth something to me. It's worth, you know, a significant amount of money, you know?
Okay. I really wanted to ask that because I think I agree with you. And I really wanted to hear that from you because, like, all these big name stores like SCG and I guess Channel Fireball, you can put them in that category, can just sponsor teams left and right. And, like, they sponsored a second team, like Team Panic by themselves, Channel Fireball. Mm-hmm. And I think, like, people like you and Sal that are, you know, smaller and going out there to put out a competitive team to sponsor them, to put money in cards is, I think it's saying a lot. Like, someone that knows a bit more than the, you know, average Joe about what's behind the scenes and the type of money that people get, it's like, it's a lot. Whereas SCG can just, like, you know, or TCG can just, like, throw money away, right? So,
yeah, they have a lot more. They have a budget for that kind of stuff, you know,
right?
And like, you know, that kind of stuff is factored in their profits and stuff. They make much more money than me and Sal, so they can afford that. And for us, it's like you said, it is a sacrifice to actually do this for these people. But at the same time, it's like, think about these players who, like, it's they're going to the Pro Tour. Like, they don't want to have to worry about things like cards. Like, they have to spend a lot of money to get there sometimes, you know, just hotel room and eating and those kind of things. And, like, if I can provide ways to like mitigate some of that cost, you know, and like help them with their deck, like get them the decks that they need, and even help them from like I have connections, let me see if I can get you some information. Like, if I can help from that perspective, I want to do that, you know, because I want that to be available to people who go to the Pro Tour, because I like the Pro Tour. I think it promotes Magic, it promotes our culture, you know.
Sweet.
And, you know, if I was going to Pro Tour, I would want like a team that I could go to and like make some extra money and like, you know, that kind of stuff. You know, like if I was just a player, like if I'm going to the Pro Tour, I'm playing for Team Legit, you know.
Hope we both make it. Just me and you, the A team.
We'll just form our own team. We'll call it the A team. Oh, man.
That's awesome. So obviously, all of the decks that we wanted to see showed up, with the exception, actually, being the Legit deck. Andrew's deck was sort of the off the radar strategy, aside from obviously the four color chant deck. Did you sort of have a chance to talk to your guys about how they came up with their decks at all, or was it just very much just like, here's the list and fill it, thanks?
Well, I was in the Facebook group for their testing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I was throwing like comments in here and there. I didn't want to throw in too many comments because they're all probably much better players than me. So I didn't want to be like the noob in there, like, hey guys, you know, did you see this card? Like, blah, 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 you know, looks like it could be good. But if I seen stuff that I thought was like stuff that they should look out for, or strategies that were being talked about on a bigger scale, I would send it to them, you know, in the Facebook group. And I knew that Bernie was going to want to play blue-white-red. And from the very beginning, they were testing, like, green-white, you know. That was something. They were working with Prozac and some other guys, too. So I trust Prozac as a deck builder, you know.
Yeah.
And so, like, Prozac was talking a lot about green-white. And I knew that Voice Resurgent was going to be a thing, you know. And so we were talking about all that stuff. And I figured that the deck that Bernie would play would be a red, white, blue style deck, you know? And so, naturally, Andrew was also playing a lot of that. So I seen the list as they were evolving. And it's funny because, like, right before the Pro Tour, the list that Andrew sent me had a Debtor's Pulpit in it. Did you guys see that?
Yeah, it's the aura for a land, and you drop it on a land. It's sort of like the Underworld Connections, but it's white. And you just tap the land and tap creature?
Yeah, yeah. It's the Aetherling tech.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Aetherling and, like, Obsidat tech. So that was something that actually Bernie had mentioned in the group, you know? So it was funny to see it in Andrew's list, but not Bernie's when I got the list of cards I needed, you know? And so, yeah, this stuff was, like, you know, I watched it as it all unfolded. I'm not going to say that, yeah, I built the deck or I had any input, but I got to watch them as they were building. And I kind of had I was getting cards for blue, white, red, and for green, white, because I assumed that, like, from the content in the Facebook group, that they would need those cards. And I didn't get, like, a list until, like, Tuesday.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so they were, like, so I was, like, already just, like, getting the cards I thought that they would need, because I'm like, yeah, a couple of these guys are going to at least be on green-white, and I know that some of them are going to be on blue-white-red. So I was, like, getting those together. And then, like, on Tuesday, I did a final push to get everything together, and then, you know.
Nice. Well, that's awesome. Obviously, Craig Wesco won the Pro Tour with the green-white deck.
Yeah, if there was any other, like, if there was someone not on my team that I wanted to win, it was Craig Wesco. So I was really, really pumped about that.
Yeah. So he played pretty well and obviously got rewarded and, you know, played the scissor deck, I think, which is awesome. So he got the good matchups and just demolished the ones that he had and got there. Drafted, obviously, like a champ. Otherwise, you know, you don't make there either. You do have to play well on both sides of that game. And yeah. And yeah, it was well deserved. He really showed that it was his day, or his weekend rather. So
the thing that I noticed about Wesco's deck is that if you look at a lot of the green white decks, you'll see that, like, a lot of them are not as focused as West Coast deck, you know what I mean? Like, he's got the Tristanis in the board. Like, some of them had, like, main deck Tristanis. He had Judge's Familiar, which was not in a lot of the green-white decks. And it just seems like it was much tighter. Like, when you look at the list, you're like, oh, man, this looks like, yeah, this is, like, sweet. I don't know about the Civic Saver. he must have just, like, Craig Wesker, those damn one-drop enchantments. Like, what was the last time?
Trusty,
like,
Machete.
Trusty Machete, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, it was a sweet. It was good to see him take it all the way.
Yeah. So that was pretty sweet. There was a ton of Esper, and the Esper decks look really, really strong moving forward. It's kind of scary. Far and away the best card.
Man, I love that I was right about that card, and everybody I told about it was like, yeah.
Yeah. what was the card you said last week?
That okay, so I heard you, like, ragging about me on Twitter for this, yes. But so what you have to understand is that if you actually go to starcitygames.com,
I don't go there.
You go to the select side, and you go to the article of Brian DeMars, who was actually at the Pro Tour, and he's a respected player. I mean, he and Michael Jacob, you know, play together and stuff. So. He actually played Warped Physique in his 75 for his Esper build, and he actually was very impressed with the card. He said it performed extremely well for him as a two of his list. So you can tell me I'm an idiot all you like, but at the end of the day, there are players that are much better than both of us that disagree with you. So
did you, like, go, like, after I ragged on you about it and, like, search the archives of all blocks?
No.
And come up with Brian DeMars?
No, I read everything. Like, I read absolutely everything that is out there on the main sites, right? So when that came up, it just stood up, and I was like, oh, look, this.
Okay, so. Listeners, this is the problem with reading everything, okay? You end up with tech from Brian DeMars, and you think that it's, like, actually a thing.
He came 74th at the Pro Tour. Like, that's pretty good.
He's known as kind of like a tinker, a brewer, you know? Like, you can't, even if he is a good player, you can't, like, take his cards from his deck and, like, say, oh yeah, this is a format, like, warping card, because he makes weird decks. Like, he adds weird cards in because he's a tinker. He likes to brew things. He doesn't like taking, like, the stock list. Like, if you look at his vintage decks, he's running, like, Tarmogoyf and Stoneforge Mystics in his vintage decks. Like, sure, he's gonna get there because he's a good player, but, like, I wouldn't tell people, like, hey, Stoneforge Mystic is a vintage staple or anything like that, you know? Because Brian DeMars played it.
Anyways.
Oh, man. But you did give Esper was actually, that was a thing, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And you know, and the obvious, like...
Oh, hello?
Hello?
Yeah. The last thing I heard was, and the obvious thing, and that's it.
Also, yeah, me too.
Yep, there's a problem with John's end of the call. Call dropped.
Wicked.
Sweet, so we don't have to listen to him try to, support his claim that I'm wrong. Okay, so that being said, we can move forward. KYT, you've been playing some Standard.
Yes, I have.
And you've been playing a little bit of the Anthony Lowry, Mike Flores mashup of Rack Red, White, Blue Auras.
Right. And I just fall for it all the time. Every time Flores says he thinks he has the best deck, I just, despite shutting myself from Hexproof, just like, okay, let's just give it another shot.
Ugh.
And played a bunch of games before the show against Travis Hall, who, as people who know him, has, like, a shit ton of brews. And I was just like, every time, like, do you have Jun on? And instead of answering the question, he would just challenge me and load up another brew. And I'm like, what am I supposed to do? Like, destroy five levels of brewery before, like, you finally show me a real deck? But it was doing well against the decks that couldn't interact with me and didn't have a fast enough clock. And it was a lot more consistent than I thought. And Judge's Familiar is really annoying against a lot of decks. It was especially annoying against one deck Travis had that only had Celestial Charm in its deck to kill any of my threats, and I just knew how to play around it. And Mike also has, I believe, two Syncopates in the main deck, which always acts as a protection for anything that they may or may not have. But I did end up losing, like, the match that I did end up losing against was when Travis pulled, like, a deck that played Abrupt Decays, and of course, Syncopate and Judge Familiars can't do anything about that. But overall, the deck seemed pretty sweet. Judge's Familiar, and I'm not sure about Curiosity, and because I didn't think I needed that card when I was playing Boggles, because it was just drawing me, I'm not trying to hit the late game, I'm just trying to kill them now.
Yeah.
So it is interesting to see if it's actually better in this version for whatever reason, just because there aren't any better enchantments in Standard. So that's now, one of the few things.
You did play a bunch of the Bant Auras deck, the recent one,
right?
Since the Armadillo Cloaks came out. Obviously, the interest to going with Red, White, Blue is Madcap Skills.
Right. Madcap Skills and the higher density of threats, because you don't have to play as many mana dorks, so you don't have those all mana dorks or no mana dorks draws.
So what creatures are there in the deck that you're trying to suit up?
So there's Fencing Ace, Invisible Stalker, Geist, and I guess sometimes Judge's Familiar. You're fine, like, putting Curiosity and getting back a card with that, so that's fine. And it's just those guys. And whereas older versions had Silverblade Paladin and as many as 8 mana dorks, I think, some versions played. So, and those are, not only are they, like, the mana dorks can do nothing, or they're just super vulnerable to anything. Like, Silverblade is just, like, a target for your Searing Spear and everything. So this has less creatures, but the creatures are doing more stuff. And, but then again, you have, like slower starts. So when you're on the draw, the deck is kind of iffy if you're just going turn 3 Geist or something. So there's always that you can't really, if a guy comes out with a really fast start, like Naya Blitz or something, and you're just like turn 3 Geist, you're pretty much screwed. So
yeah.
So are you talking about the difference between the Bant version and the Red, White, Blue?
Right. Yeah.
They both suck. No.
the Bant version has voice, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
That seems good, man. Voice is a really good card.
Yeah, but this one had what is that? Boris Charm, Madcap Skills. Mike really likes Slayer's Stronghold. I've yet to use it because it's so like awkward.
Yeah.
But he's like, as much as I felt like maybe it should be like one of the first cards I'd cut, in like his latest tweets, like, you think we could add a second one? I don't know what he's thinking.
He's crazy, man. He's crazy.
He is crazy. He is crazy. He always has the latest and greatest, apparently.
Now, how's that versus Junk Reanimator? I think Junk is like a right. Junk is like a dog to it, no?
Right. Well, it's, I haven't played against it yet, but against Bant, it's, and before Dragon's Maze, it was a big dog, I think. But now, I don't know. It really depends on the sideboard. With Junk, if you bring in like 3 Abrupt Decays, I'm assuming you're in much better shape than people who are bringing 2 or just 1.
What about like Acidic Slime is a thing against that deck, right?
Right. So the Acidic Slime versions are definitely more prepared to deal with the Hexproof.
Yeah, I've been thinking about that matchup. I haven't got to play it yet, but I feel like I would be not great. Not well favored in that matchup.
Yeah, because some starts they just have the Fencing Ace like start, and you just don't have that much removal. At least the older, I don't know what the most recent versions play, and then like game one you just like shred them with Fencing Ace sometimes. So.
Yeah. So is this a deck you're on, or I missed kind of the intro here? Are you playing this deck, or are you just testing it?
I'm just testing it. I'm probably still going to play Aristocrats at the World Magic Cup qualifier. That's the plan. But it's just messing around every time. Mm-hmm. You know, I just have to give Mike my love every single time. It's like, this deck's the best.
You know, okay. you should try Joshua Lemister's deck.
Oh god.
He likes to brew, so you should give that a shot.
He likes too many brews. He's like, go play this, play that, but he has unlimited amount of brews. But some of them have some gems inside them that he just needs
He's got a lot of ideas, just needs to hone them, you know?
Yeah. But, like, no one wants to play test them, so he gets nowhere, right? Like, help me test this idea. Fuck no. I'm sorry, Josh. You know that's how it is. You know that's exactly how it is. But, I think the deck's fine. And I was beating Travis's bruise, so if you want a deck that has a decent win percentage, at least against like people that are bringing bad decks to PTQs, I think I would play it for sure. It's one of the safer choices.
I don't want to play against that deck. I know that it's gonna be not the greatest.
Should we move to your?
Yeah, John. So you made some big changes to Junk this week. Why don't you tell us what you've done and how your tournament went?
All right. Yeah. I can talk about that. So I've been playing Junk Reanimator since like I started playing Standard again, and it's kind of climbed into like the top deck, and now it's kind of, I think it's fallen off a bit, right? There hasn't been any Junk. Oh no, actually the latest had a bunch of Junk in it, right? The latest.
The latest Star City event was actually won by like the top two were Reanimator lists.
Yeah, and the week before there was no Reanimator
list. It was just like all aggro. Everyone was like, State of the Burning Tree Shaman, let's go.
Yeah. So what I did is I've been looking for ways to kind of gain an edge in the Junk deck. One of the biggest enemies to Junk is Aristocrats. You are a huge dog to that deck. I tried some Curse of Death's Hold in my board the other day. And I still lost to Aristocrats. So basically, I was looking for a way to beat Aristocrats. And it looks like a good way to do that is by running Blood Baron Viscopa. Do you guys know what that card is?
Nope.
All right, so what that card is, let me read it so I don't screw it up here. It is a 5-mana creature. So it's 3, a white, and a black creature. It has lifelink, protection from white, and protection from black. And then it has this other thing that's basically flavor text. It says, as long as you have 30 or more life and an opponent has 10 or less life, Blood Baron gets +6/+6 and has flying. And it's a 4/4. So basically it's a 4/4 with lifelink, protection from white, protection from black for 5 mana. So the reason why this guy is good against Aristocrats, well, because they can't kill it, okay? And you swing through their whole deck. So, like, it makes it hard for them to race you because you're gaining 4 life and you're swinging through whatever, like, they're usually used to, like, blocking with, like, Lingering Souls or, like, a guy, Aristocrat, and give him pro. He can race a Falcon Wrath Aristocrat because you gain 4 life back when you hit with him. And he can't be Tragic Slipped or any other thing. The only thing that they could pretty much get you with is like Blasphemous Act to kill him. So I figured I want to run this guy because I don't like my Aristocrats matchup. And as I started to think about like his usefulness in most matchups, I think he is pretty comparable to Thragtusk. And so what I did is I cut Thragtusk for this guy. So 0 Thragtusk, 4 Blood Baron Viscopas. So that's what I started with. I did that. What do you guys think of that change? Let's start there.
I don't know, man. It seems kind of cool, but...
But I think that...
I don't know, man.
I think that it's going to do great in the matchups that you're talking about. And I think that the not being able to just get the guy out of the yard and instantly gain 5 life, I think is going to potentially cost you more games than not having Thragtusk. you know?
Yeah.
Okay. So, yeah, I was also worried about that. And obviously, the difference is you don't gain the life immediately. You have to hit or block with it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of, like, troublesome in decks that have, like, a lot of reach, you know? But in other other matchups, and we'll talk about this as I talk about my tournament, like, I feel like this guy is like equal to or better than Thragtusk. And so what happened is I cut the Thragtusk, I run four of these guys. I figured that some of the matchups where this guy would be less than a Thragtusk is like the red green matchup or like the mono red matchup. I feel like those, like, I want to gain the life immediately.
Yeah.
And he doesn't really, like, do anything special in those matchups. You know what I mean? Like, he gains life, more life incrementally, but he doesn't gain it right away. And also, like, their creatures are green and red most of the time. So, like, his protection doesn't do much, you know? It does, however, like, block and swing through a Boros Reckoner, which is, like, important in some of those matchups.
Sure.
So I figured, well, since I'm going to be, like, letting my guard down a little bit with those matchups, what I wanted to do is I wanted to have something lower to kind of stave the bleeding so that I can play this guy and be at a healthy life total. So what I did is what you usually do in Junk Reanimators, you have like three drops to do that. So what you really need is like a mana dork into like a three drop on turn two to kind of really get a good start. And so the three drops that they use are like Fiend Hunter or, you know, that stupid Centaur Healer, and sometimes even Luxodon Smiter.
Yep.
So what I did is I cut those, and I ran four Voice of Resurgence. So, like, the idea there is, like, to block with Voice, get a token, block with a token, and then, like, by the time they're done, like, swinging through all these Voices, then you have your Blood Baron, you know, and then you can race. And then by the time they're, like, starting to overcome the Blood Baron, then you just angel them or whatever. So those are the changes I made. I cut the Sin Collectors from the main deck. I know that KYT was not a fan last week when you guys talked about it. And I was also not a fan in most matchups. I like him.
Yes.
yeah, exactly. I mean, I like him in the Jund matchup. I like him in the control matchup. But like in all these the matchups that I'm like scared of, like the aggro matchups, he doesn't do anything. He sucks.
Yeah. And so it's like, yes.
Yeah, so I'm like, I'm cutting him for Voices, basically, and the other three drops, you know, like the Fiend Hunters. I also cut the Angels, the Restoration Angels, because I don't have Sin Collector's main, and I don't have Thragtusk anymore. So yep. Restoration Angel, Diminishing Returns. Ran two Garrix instead, because that was something that AJ's did on your stream. I thought, I'll give it a shot. So I ran two Garrigs, cut the Angels. That was my configuration. I go to the tournament last night. First round was kind of a bye. I played against this kid. Last time I played him, he crushed me because I drew two lands. I mulled the sticks and drew two lands both games. So he crushed me. He didn't even know what I was playing. Like, he just beat me so bad. So this time he's my first round opponent. And last time he was on mono white. Okay. So I was like, oh man, these Blood Barons are probably going to be pretty good against him. So sure enough, game one, I just play a Blood Baron and he can't beat it. He has O-rings and crap and like obviously can't O-ring it. And I can race his little dudes. So game one, I beat him. Game two, mold six, get stuck on two lands again and die. Game three, double Blood Baron him and then he scoops.
Yeah.
So I was like, all right, so obviously Blood Baron is really good in the mono white matchup. Okay. So
obviously
didn't get to test it too well in that one. So next matchup, I play against Bant Control. Bant Flash. It has like Advent of Worm, like Snapcaster Mage, and all that crap. I annihilate him. Blood Baron is not like super good in that matchup, but you can just like have anything in that slot, like basically a ham sandwich, and like especially because I have Voices main. So, like, he's playing, like, his Think Twice is, like, on his turn and like, all that crap, you know, like, so my Voices are main, I got a Voice down, and I start beating the crap out of him with that. I have two Death Rites main, so, like, that's, like, whoring him, and then, like, I...
Voice just shuts that, like, makes that not a real deck anymore, right?
Voice really puts a damper. If you have them down, it puts a damper on the deck because they have to play things on their turn. And then if they try to, like, I got to the point in game one where he was like at 6 life, and I had 2 voices on the board.
Right. So
if he wrath, I had a mana dork in my hand that I was holding.
Yeah.
So if he wrath, then I just play the mana dork and hit him for 6.
You know? Yeah. Yeah.
And then I have 3 acidic slimes main, so it's like I start like cutting his mana down, and like it's just not a great matchup for him. So then, second game, I just board it. I actually board the Vescopas out. I leave the voices in, and then I bring in 4 Sin Collectors because I have those 4 of those in the main, already in the side. Bring in 4 Sin Collectors and then like something else, and yeah, it wasn't even close. Like, second game just destroyed him with Sin Collector and, you know, acidic slime. I bring in the 4th slime, and yeah, so that was easy, kind of like a buy because of that matchup. Round 3, I play against Mono Red, and game 1, I got mana screwed. I didn't have a black to cast my Blood Baron. So I had 5 mana. So had it been a Thrag Tusk, I probably could have stabilized. Because I had 5 mana, but I didn't have the black. So that was something I had to kind of consider. Also, when you're playing the Cavern Souls, you always have to consider naming Vampire now.
Yeah.
So it's harder on the mana, which I discovered at that. But I also was just mana screwed. So like, if I wasn't mana screwed, maybe it would have turned out much better. And so like what ended up happening there was I finally got the black mana. I was at 4 life and I had to play my land untapped. So I go to 2 life. I play my Blood Baron, which could have been a Thrag Tusk. And then I'm at 2 life. He untaps and just burns me. Just the same, like, same problem that you described, Scotty. It's like I finally got my 5th mana. I play my Blood Baron and then boom, burn, you're dead.
Yeah.
So had that been a Thrag Tusk, it would have been good. So second game, I play an Blood Baron, and I start to steal the game. He, like, beats the crap out of me with, like, a quick start. And, like, I have Voice Resurgence on turn 2, so I eat some damage, eat some more damage with the token, and then, like, play my Blood Baron just like I planned, right? So I start to gain that momentum again, and then I'm like at 11 life. He's trying to fight hard. I have a second Blood Baron that's going to come down the next turn. And then he Blasphemous Axe his Reckoner and kills me.
Ugh.
So like Thrag Tusk wouldn't have made a difference in that one. And actually the Blood Baron gained me like, I don't know. I was playing against this like that stupid dragon that you swing with and then comes back to your hand.
Yep.
Yeah, so he was, like, fouring me every turn, but thankfully the Blood Baron was, like, gaining that life back, or I would have been, like, dead a long time ago. But then, like, naturally, the Reanimator deck always loses to like, the stupid Reckoner combo. That's, like, one of the enemies of the deck. So yeah, I lose there. I go, okay. So I lose to Mono Red, move to my last match, and I play against the Mirror match. And turns out the Blood Baron is very good in the mirror match. I played an early one on game 1, and then he scooped because he couldn't beat it. Like, he had a sever in the yard. He couldn't sever it.
Yeah, and you can't angel it.
You can't angel it, and the angel can't even race.
Yeah.
Because, like, they're hitting me for 5. I'm hitting them for 4, but I'm gaining 4.
Yep.
So it's like they're hitting me for 1, and I'm hitting them for 4. So he scooped to it because he couldn't beat it. He's like, I don't have an answer in my 75. And then in like game 2, I just like acidic slimed him out, like just like double slimed him because I boarded into the 4 slimes, like the mana denial package,
mm-hmm.
and just like slimed him out, and then he couldn't do anything. So I went 3-1, and I'm very happy with the changes. I still feel like the only way I lose with that deck is getting land screwed, or freaking Blasphemous Act Reckoner, or like Aristocrats, like any Aristocrats game. So yeah, I might add a 24th land. I don't know yet. I'm still on the fence about that. Like, I feel like I want a 24th land. It's probably going to be a black-white land so I can support the Blood Baron better.
It sounds about right. I mean, you know, those are obviously the 2 colors that you're having the most issue with.
I'm always having the issue with black. Like, what'll always happen is like I'll have like a grizzly salvage, like I'll mold a like five or six, and like my hand will be like two green white lands and a grizzly salvage, and like some other like business, right? So I'll be like, yeah, I'll keep this because like if I get a black mana, and then I'll never get the black mana. Like 12 turns later, like no black mana. So that's happened to me enough to be like, I need another black source in here, I think.
Yeah.
Because the mana dorks don't really help with that.
With a black source? No.
Yeah. Yeah. Unless it's like death rite. But if you have a death rite that's making you mana, then you're like in really good shape. You don't really, like, you don't really care, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Well, that's really interesting, man. I'm glad to see that you got the brewer's bug and it didn't bite you in the ass.
Yeah, I feel good. I feel good about those changes. I did cut the Garruks after that matchup, after that tournament, because they didn't really do anything.
No.
I thought that they, like, I didn't think this, but, like, for a split second, I thought that they surged when you played them. Like, when you play them, I thought you could immediately surge. I forgot that you had to, like, shoot something first. So, like, I was like, oh, this is sick, man. I played him. I'm going to sack my mana dork and go get an Angel of Serenity. And I'm like, oh, wait a second. I have to wait two turns for that? I'm like, this card is not the greatest.
I have to sacrifice two guys. The first one has to fight me.
Yeah, so what I ended up doing is cutting the two Garruks for another Abrupt Decay. So I have two in the main. And then my third mulch. I went back to three mulches because of that stupid land issue. But I think I'm also going to find a spot for a 24th land. And then... I think I'm fairly happy with the list. Like, I feel good about it. I mean, this tournament is not a great representation because it's, like, I didn't play against, like, a lot of good decks or anything. But like, just seeing, like, the interaction with the cards, like, I feel like the voices are working out the way that I want them to. And I feel like the Blood Baron has a lot of teeth. I think it can replace Strike Task and it could be good. Like, even, like, incidental things, like, in game one against the Bant player, he couldn't Azorius Charm the Blood Baron. So, you know, that kind of stuff is, like, relevant, you know?
Yeah. Well, yeah, he does dodge almost every single bit of removal, right? Except for, Mizzy Mortars is the big one with his name on it, right?
Yeah, yeah. But, like, Dreadbore, like, all this, the, like, Detention Sphere, like, just all kinds of, like, incidental things that you don't think about. And then, like, being able to swing through things is, like, more relevant than not. Like, he doesn't get Fiend Huntered.
Yeah.
You know, he just, like, just a lot of, like, weird things, weird interactions. You do lose some functionality, like, some of the deeper plays. Like, if you're going to, sometimes you'll angel your Thrag Tusk so that, like, you can have a Tusk after the Wrath or something. You can't angel it yourself. So you can't do, like, things, you know, or even, like, Fiend Hunter or Thrag Tusk, but I'm not playing Fiend Hunter, I'm playing Voices instead. So there's some, like, deeper plays that you can't do with it, but I feel like the things that it does do, it makes up for, like, these other things, you know?
Like, do you feel like it gives it more of a mid-range feel, or does it feel, like does it feel any less like a Reanimator deck because there's just, you know, fewer shenanigans with the Angels going on, or what?
Like, it felt less like a Reanimator deck for a long time, especially when you go the Restoration Angel route with the Acidic Slimes.
Yeah.
Like, you feel like you should play that deck like Reanimation is the bonus, right? You should not be playing that deck where Reanimation is, like, the focus, you know? Like, you want to, like, basically, like, get a mid-range game going and then just trump them with, like, infinite, like, recursion, you know?
Makes sense.
So, but you do feel like less like that. Like, you feel like the recursion, because the problem is with Thrag Tusk, you leave a token behind, and then, like, you get to, like, start to grind the crap out of them with that. And with Blood Baron, it's different. Like, it's a different route, you know? You're trying to just get through and kill them. So that's why, like, the voices make more sense in the Blood Baron version. But Blood Baron is also a dog to other Thrag Tusks.
Yes.
That's one thing that I wanted to note, because I was playing some test games with, like, a junk token guy, and having, like, him having the Thrag Tusk versus my Blood Baron was not the greatest. So that's a question mark right now. Like, how do I respond to Thrag Tusk? The way I figure it is that decks with Thrag Tusk, I have pretty good matchups anyways, because, like, Angels are going to trump that, you know?
So you kind of have to have more heavily rely on more of your deck, I guess.
To do, yeah, more, I might work, I right? might also go up to more Severs, Because, like, now that I'm not playing Thragtusk, like, my answer to Thragtusk could be Severs.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, so I could just sever their tusks and then, like, just start swinging the Baron because they have a 3-3, which doesn't matter, you know? So I might up the sever count to kind of mitigate that whole... Because right now, it is a problem that, you know, Blood Baron does not match up well with Thragtusk.
Well, keep us posted. Are you taking this bastard to F&M tomorrow?
No, I'm actually going on another trip tomorrow, so no F&M. But maybe I could talk someone into playing it, you know, see how they do.
Well, I mean, you know, Bernie Wen can win a PTQ. We could probably win F&M with a ham sandwich.
Yeah, I'll see if Bernie Wen or, like, Adam Prozac will take it, you know?
Oh, nice. Prozac could probably have fun.
Yeah, he'll be like, yeah, this needs more auger bolus.
He's like one of the few people in Magic left that still loves that card.
Oh, he loves that card, man. He loves it. Him and those two-drop blue creatures, like Merfolk Looter was his great love, you know?
Yeah. Well, he just loves to loot.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter what color or how big it is. Does it loot? Yep, I'm in.
I'm in. But I'm liking the way Standard's shaping up, man. Advent of Worm, that's a beastly card. Holy smokes.
Yeah. I've really had to kind of take a hard look at what I'm doing with a lot of the 75 in Jund because of it. Actually, that's one of the main cards that have got me thinking. And it's Standard's fucking awesome right now. There's so many cool decks. And there's so many cool decks doing cool things. Like even that new Junk Aristocrats deck. It looks pretty good.
Look at the Sand Black, right? He's like, yeah, Voice Resurgence, we're going to sacrifice that a bunch of times.
Yeah, but I mean, like, honestly, it's really just all about Cartel Aristocrat and Barrels. Like, anytime I was talking to Cap and Top Deck, Daniel Dusang, he top baited a Star City Games event, I guess down in Dallas or whatever, because mm-hmm. I think it's where he's from. Anyways, he's on Glory Seekers podcast and in Planeswalkers Asylum, but anyway, so he's, like, well-known for playing, like, Naya decks and that sort of stuff, and I was talking to him just today, and he said that, seriously, he's been playing that junk deck, and, like, if you just put even just two counters on a Cartel Aristocrat, you basically just put the game on layaway, because eventually you're going to win it. Like, it's pretty scary. So, I don't know, man.
That's
like,
funny, you know, like... You don't think of that kind of interaction, but it's like, yeah, if it's like a 4/4 that's pro.
Unblockable, basically. Like
unblockable, yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty sweet. And I didn't really get a significant enough appreciation for that card until I played it, you know, in an Aristocrats build on my stream. And I was just like, wow, this card's absurd. And then as soon as you put, I'm just like, wow, I'm just getting in for two every turn, or like three with Exalted, or, you know, six with Exalted Double Strike. Like, this is dumb. this isn't fair Magic, and yet look at all my blockers, you know? And it's just crazy being able to just make him a beast with Varel's ability, and like you're all, it's just like the deep synergy there with just sacking creatures to make your Cartel Aristocrat unblockable or save it from removal. Like, it's pretty crazy, this shit that you can do. It's a real deck. It's a real deck.
Makes me think about Pithing Needle, you know? That's one of the things that I was been considering with... Because I've been racking my brain about beating Aristocrats, and, like, Pithing Needle is something I was really curious about doing, you know?
Yeah. So, like, the red-white-black version folds pretty handily to, like, a Curse of Death's Hold.
Yeah, I still have two of those on my board, and I added two Tragic Slips.
Yeah, it's good too.
Yeah.
But I mean, like the green, white, black version. I mean, it doesn't totally just roll over.
No, it doesn't seem like it does. It doesn't.
Varels can do some work to try to, you know, undo some of that damage. But you know, you can still cast a guy, dump it in the yard, scavenge it onto the other guy. You know. Mm-hmm. So I don't know, man. If that tends to take off, it's going to be interesting. But I've really started to kind of, with some of these aggressive decks and a lot of the tokens and stuff that are starting to get played, tokens that are being left behind by, you know, Advent of the Worms and of course, the voices, like Abrupt Decay is really good right now.
Yeah, really, yeah, I've always had that. I had to go down to three Abrupt Decays this week. But, like, again, I freaking died of Boros Reckoner. So, like, you got to have four Abrupt Decay with the junk deck, you know? So, like, even, like, incidental things like Ground Seal and, you know, that kind of stuff, annoying things, you still need the decays. Yeah. And they're really good in the matchups that are not great for you, like the aggro's fast matchups, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I got to have four of those in there, man. It's just every time I try to go to three, it's, like, not good news.
Yeah. But, I mean, like, even in Jund, like, I'm trying to play at least three. Plus, I've still got Putrefies and Dread Boars and, like, everything else to just kill stuff. But Abrupt Decay, just being able to have a nice, neat, tidy, can't-touch-this answer to, you know, an Advent of the Worm and a Bant Flash deck is pretty nice.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. It seems like those Advents, like I was saying, man, they just come out of nowhere. Like, all of a sudden, you're staring down this, like, 5/5 Trampler. It's like, what?
Yeah, the dreaded penis assault, man. I'm telling you, it's a big game.
I was hoping they made green white worm tokens because then I can block them with my burger. But I'm like, so I read the card. I'm like, nope, those are just green. Oh, that sucks.
Disappointing.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it's I don't know. I really like Aetherling. Obviously, dominated the Pro Tour. It's going to be very relevant, I think.
In standard,
I mean, people are now realizing, wow, that card's really, really, really powerful, and everybody's going to try playing it right now. You're going to see Jace come back too, I think, because people just forgot how good he was.
Yeah, did you hear about a little birdie bought me out of Jace's? You hear about that?
No.
Yeah, a little birdie bought me out of Jace's.
Really?
Same little birdie bought me out of Moxuples today. So yeah, and you know. Jace is now, what is it, $15 on Stars of the Games?
Is that what he is now?
He's 15, I think. Let me double check. He might have even gone up higher. And then Moxel is $40.
They bought you out of 20.
Mox Opal is $40.
And you got bought out of 20.
Yeah, 20 is what I was selling Mox Opals for before they were bought out by an unnamed
source.
Online conglomerate.
So yeah, so that's interesting because of the, you know why they bought those Mox Opals?
Oh, this is geez, John, it's like you've been podcasting forever.
I know, you know, but you ruined it because you're actually introducing the segue, which is like totally the worst. But but yeah, you know why they bought me out of this?
Why, John? Why did they buy
you out of this? Because, I don't know if you heard about this, rules change or not.
Rules change? Oh my god, the sky is falling! Damage is off the stack! Magic is over as we know it!
The sky is falling! I want to hear everyone's opinion on this. What do you guys think of the rules change?
Jay, start with you, because I heard you like having some opinions about it. I know somebody shipped you the article at work, and you've had all day to think about this. What do you think about the new
rules? You guys
rules?
Should go over them. We should go over them before we fucking...
All right.
So before Jay lays the beats.
So there's a bunch of rules changes. Should we start with one? Okay.
We can do like a round table.
Okay. So the first rule that's changing is, this is like rule A and B, because they're basically the same thing.
Yeah.
Okay. So the legend rule has changed. Basically, what typically would happen is there can only be one legendary creature of the same name on the field for both sides of the players. Like, both players can only have one between them. And whenever there's a second one, when you clone it or whatever, it dies. They both die. So, starting July 13th, and then started taking place on Magic Online July 24th, you now can both possess one copy of the same legend on each side of the field. So, where this gets really awesome is, oh, really interesting, without tipping my hat here, is that when two are in the field for you at the same time, when a new one enters... you get to decide which one stays and which one goes. So if somebody can, so the example they use in the article is if you control Taysa and your opponent pacifisms it, you cast another Taysa, you choose the new one to stay, and the old one, enchanted by pacifism, is put into its owner's graveyard, and then thereby destroying the pacifism. So, now obviously your opponent casts Rurik Thar, you cast Regenerator Mimic, you copy Rurik Thar, you can both stay on the battlefield, because he has one and you have one. The same thing is being done with Planeswalkers. of the same name. So you still can't have, like, with the same name subtypes. You still can't have, like, Jace Bellerin and Jace Architect of Thought and Jace the Mind Sculptor and, you know, whatever, all of them running at the same time. But you can cast Jace Bellerin, draw a card, then cast Jace the Mind Sculptor, choose to bury Jace Bellerin, and keep your Jace. Your opponents, of course, can also have Jace, and you can have Jace, and you can make Legacy terrible all in one shot. So that's a legend rule, as it's changing. Jay, what do you think of this?
Well, I want to hear Jay's opinion, but just a quick, like, just a quick thing. So, like, when a little birdie bought the internet out of Jace the Mind Sculptors.
Yeah, so I was hoping you'd say this.
A month ago, right? It's interesting that maybe that little birdie is, like, a little more informed than the rest of us. Because wouldn't you like to have Jace's right now? Now that both players can have them on both sides of the field? Now that you can Jace, use an ability, then cast the Jace over the top of it and brainstorm or something like that? I don't know, man. I feel like I'd love to have some Jace's right now.
You know, the other one that's going to get really jacked, by the way, is Liliana the Veil. Because when this hits Modern, being able to cast Liliana, Edict, then cast another one in Edict again,
yeah,
instead of having to wait a turn and discard, like, both of those playing, like, she's already stupid money. She's going to get, oh, anyways.
And then also the whole Gaea's Cradle interaction, right? Yeah. It's like Gaea's Cradle, tap for 1,000,000 mana, play a Gaea's Cradle, tap for 1,000,000 mana.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is going to be interesting. So go ahead, Jay. Let me hear what you think about these things.
Well, I think it's fucking stupid. I like can't fucking believe this for like so many reasons. First of all, I'm so fucking sick of this Magic game just being like just dialed down constantly, like just constantly dialed down. And it's like it's just getting really annoying to the point where it's like, oh well, you know, we don't put this many words on a common card. We fucking have to call it a flavorful name. We now like instead of, you know, abolishing the legend rule, what we're going to do is basically abolish the legend rule but continue to print legends for no reason, and then we're going to, like, have this weird kind of rule that doesn't actually make any fucking sense. It makes no sense at all. And, like, this is how I look at it. And it's not even from, like, a flavor standpoint. Like, I don't care so much about the flavor. It's not that I don't care about it. It's just, like, logically, it just doesn't make sense. Like, I'm Jay, the fucking fire-breathing planeswalker. And John is the ice breathing guy, and we're like friends, right? But John also really likes his money, so KYT, the you know, I don't know, black magic guy, he's like, whatever, sup, I'm gonna fucking pay John to come and ice breathe all over you, fiery Jay, you bitch. And then I'm like, oh man, don't do that. John, I'm also going to pay the exact same amount of money for you to do that back to KYT. And then what's going to happen is there's going to be all of a sudden two Johns just looking at each other, just fucking, like, just, sup, sup over there, sup. Like, what happens if we both have a Chandra, and I'm like, Chandra -1 to ping you, redirect to Chandra, and then he's like, yeah, I'll do the same. And now, like, what's, how does that work? What's that? What's happening?
Fighting Chandra, man.
Like, yeah. What's happening there? And then, okay, then on top of that, they're like, oh, man, if you have a legend and you cast a legend, you can only have one legend because it's a legend. So what happens with the legend is you choose which legend dies and then the other legend sticks around. Why? Why can't I just have two legends? If you can have the legend and I can have the legend, how is that different than me having two legends? I'll tell you how it's different. Because nobody wants to fucking face two Geist of St. Traft on turn 4. And they realized, they went, hey guys in the pit who are obviously the best Magic players ever and know everything and are great. Hey, turn 1 Mana Dork, turn 2 Geist of St. Traft is pretty good. What happens if I go turn 3 Geist of St. Traft? What happens? And they just were like, fuck you. I'm not playing that. And they were like, all right, back to the drawing board. back to the drawing board. How about this? You attack with the Geist of St. Traff for 6 on turn 2 or 3 now. Then you cast a second Geist of St. Traff and you get to pick which one dies.
Leaving the new one untapped.
Then you could leave the new one, right? Yeah, you could leave the new one. Oh, that's totally fine. It makes all the sense in the whole fucking world. It just doesn't make any fucking sense. And like, why did... And then they said like this whole big... like they said this whole big garbagey bullshit about, oh, you know, clone was never intended to be a kill spell for legends. Well, you know, we've been playing Magic for like 20 fucking years. Like, you've just figured out how to fix this by just... by just saying, like, hey, yeah, like, if you clone your own thing, then it's like a Doomblade. But if you clone someone else's thing, that's like a mirror. That's just like, it's just like a three-way call. Like, you're just like, what's up, everybody? And everybody could hear you. They're all like, what's up? Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. That's perfect. Like, to use Scotty's impeccable example from before, you cast a Rurik Thar. Then I cast a Progenitor Mimic on Rurik Thar. Now we both have Rurik Thar. But then what happens is in my upkeep, I get a second Rurik Thar that then they're like, holy fuck, we're both over here, man. We both can't be over here, man. One of us has got to go, man. And then they just, and then they're like, oh, you got to kill that guy. As long as you stay over there, you gotta stay over there. You stay over there, it's all good. You stay over there. But you come over here, nope. I'll fucking slit your throat. I'll beat you till you stop moving. Doesn't make any fucking sense. That makes no fucking sense at all. There's no reason for that. And now, and then like people are like, oh man, I don't know why everyone's complaining about this. It makes it more skill intensive, but I don't know how. Like, I'm not disagreeing that it makes it more skill intensive. I'm actually just, I don't know how me playing a Liliana and you playing a Liliana and then me playing a Liliana and then using it and then another Liliana and then using it and then reanimating it and then using it and then playing it and then using it. How is that more skill intensive? I feel like I'm playing Yu-Gi-Oh! Like, I don't understand why that's more skill intensive than me going play a legend and then you're like, ah shit.
I think that this is going along the lines of Wizards wanting us to be able to play our cards. Like, it stopped with Stone Rain. Like, started with Stone Rain. No more land destruction is now a...
So you're like, when are they gonna ban counterspells? And Doomblade.
They're working on it. They've already made them. They've been making them progressively terrible all throughout the years. Like, I mean, to get a really good counterspell, it cancels 3 mana. Like, yeah,
that's what I'm saying. Like, this, I'm just getting really sick of every time they print a new Magic set, there's no cards that are good, and,
no cards that are good.
And then they make everything like the lowest common denominator. Like, what's for fun? I'm just gonna smash you with my guys, and then you're gonna smash me with your guys, and then we're gonna just smash each other with the same guy because that's okay somehow. And then one of us is gonna win. You want a Doomblade? Yeah. Well, next set that's gonna be Murder for 3 mana, and after that it's gonna be a Sacrifice effect for 4 mana. Then after that, it's not gonna make removal. Or it's not gonna make it. You know, in real life, you can't just Doomblade a guy. You gotta kill him with your own bare hands or a gun of some sort. That's what we're gonna do. Now we're just gonna take away all removal. We're gonna make it so you have to bump into each other to kill each other. Counterspells. People don't like getting counterspells. You're like, I play this. And I'm like, I counter that. And then you're like, fuck you. I hate counterspells. So we're gonna take that away. I play a Rurik Thar. I love playing my Rurik Thar. He's like the best character of all time. And I'm like, Rurik Thar! And then you're just like, fucking clone for like 2 less mana. That is bullshit. So we're taking that away. We're taking it away. You get a car, and you get a car, and you get a car. Ugh. I'm over it.
So you don't like the change?
No.
Jay's back.
Oh man, you know what is a sweet interaction with this new legend rule? Prime Speaker Zagana, draw 5 cards. Prime Speaker Zagana, draw
6 cards. Yeah, I know. It's awesome.
And get to keep your guy.
Yeah.
I'm up in the price of Prime Seeker right
seriously,
now.
Seriously, how are you late to that party, John? That. How are you late to that party?
This is super skill intensive. This is way higher skill than in the before. Yeah. Oh man, like EDH Raffelos, make a million
I still
man.
Have six
Raffelos,
Prime Seekers?
Make a, like oh my god.
How do I have six Prime Seekers in stock? Nobody's talking about the Prime Seeker tech, man.
I told you, I'm a visionary.
Oh, dude, you know what I should do? I should buy Star City out of Prime Speakers.
Oh, that's hilarious. You totally should. How many do they have? Like a billion?
They have 38. And then I'll put in the comments, gotcha, bitch.
Bitch. Turnabout's fair play, Pete. Turnabout's fair play. Have a nice day.
If they call you on it, you just say, no, that was cloned, Medina. And it's no problem.
I'll just change my first letter of my first name and the first letter of my last name.
Yeah.
Like Alex used to do, Jonathan Jadina.
Yeah, 38, and then they've got a bunch of slight.
You know, to be honest, though, they would ship. They're Star City Games are not scumbags like that. They will ship if you buy cards from them.
Yep.
Yeah. I've done it before. I've done it with Vorinclex.
Nice.
Yeah. It's pretty sweet.
But the other thing, like, Varyl's also benefits greatly from this rule, by the way.
Why?
Well, like in that Aristocrats deck, like the problem is like you just don't want to play an extra Varyls. Like it, you only want to play three, but then you always want to have them. But like now you can be like, well, instead of scavenging this bullshit little one guy, like 1/1, I can now just play this guy, sack, like it dies, scavenge it. Like you don't have to worry about it. The other thing that this may be leading towards, though, is people are saying that, Theros is going to be like almost like another Kamigawa block where everything's going to be like have these huge legendary creatures. And
well, I don't know why people are saying that, but yeah.
Well, I mean, why else change the rule just before this set?
No, I meant before this rule came out. Sorry.
No, I think...
now that the rule has changed, it makes sense that people are like, we were right.
I don't know why people were saying that. I mean, now it makes sense.
I didn't.
But what I'm saying is, like,
before
that, people were saying that. They were like, "Oh, do you think that it's going to be like Kamigawa and it's all going to be these sweet, like Greek legends?" And then there was all these like topics about, "Oh, what Greek legends do you think are going to be in Theros?"
Was this on Reddit?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I didn't read it. That's why.
You know, it's on like Twitter, and I'm sure people are talking about it.
He's trying to save face by saying it's on Twitter. It's on Reddit, dude. Yeah. That's where it's
The at. Other one that's interesting is there is Evan Irwin, of all people, has speculated that maybe this means we're getting Grandeur back as one of the keyword abilities. Now, Grandeur was on a cycle of legends.
Wasn't it Grandeur?
It sure. is, yeah.
Sure, Grandeur. So so it's... It's,
I don't know what grandeur is. I know
sure.
What
like I'm grand. Is. Like I'm grander than you.
I'm grander than you.
Yeah.
Fuck off.
I'm so grander
standing.
So it was on a cycle of legends in Future Sight on the Future Shifted cards.
Right.
And it basically gives you something to do with the extra legends that you may have in your hand right. that have the same name of people that are already on the battlefield. So, I mean, that might be a thing. I mean, we haven't seen it since.
Just
since
so,
those future shifting
for those
cards.
People that didn't know what that is, because Scotty only half kind of explained it, like, which I mean, he did a good
so
job.
So I'll give you an
basically
example.
What it
so
was. Yeah.
So Baru Fist of Croza is one of those creatures, which is an example of a creature with grandeur.
That's like
so,
the worst one, but go ahead.
No, it's good. It's good in EDH.
It's good. It's good. So he's a 4/4. Whenever force comes into play, green creatures you control get 1/1 and gain trample till end of turn. But his ability with grandeur is discard another card named Baru Fist of Croza. That's it. That's the only cost. So long as Baru's in play, you can discard another copy of Baru, and you put an XX green worm creature token into play where X is the number of lands you control. So basically the idea is if the original legend's in play, you discard a copy of him from your hand, and then you do something sweet.
Yeah, did you say this is good in EDH? Because I'm going to slap you in the face if you
No,
say
the guy, Baru Fist of Croza is good
he's,
in EDH,
yeah,
not his extra ability.
No,
yeah.
No.
Yeah, because you can't actually use his ability in EDH.
No, but you said the card sucks. I was saying the card is...
Which I would like to appeal to anybody who listens to this who is important in the EDH community.
Like who? Why don't,
you should let us run a copy of our general in our deck so that we can grandeur it. Because, like, my favorite grandeur ability... is Korlash's ability.
Yeah.
It's the best grandeur ability out there, I believe. Okay, so Korlash is a zombie, a big effing zombie. Okay, he's 4 mana, and he's as big as many swamps as you control. His grander ability is search your library for 2 swamps and put them into play. What?
What?
Whoa.
Yeah, he's crazy. And I don't know if this ability is very good, but also it might be my favorite because I killed the best player in my shop when I was playing in Vermont with that ability. Because he was all cocky and he was like, yeah, I'll take the damage. And I'm like, oh yeah?
Fucking got you.
Grandeur this guy. Twice.
Fucking twice. Suck it.
Oh, man.
So, yeah. So, I mean, that may happen. But, I mean, that all remains to be seen. It's all speculation. John, what do you think about these rules?
What about KYT? KYT, what do you think of these rules?
He's going to say they're garbage and he quits. So
I quit. No. I mean, is the reasoning just because they wanted to make clone work the way they wanted to?
It would I don't seem think like that's the only reason, right?
No.
It would seem like the older rule is more just like how they eliminated the stack for during the combat step. It seems like the old legendary rule just seems more intuitive than this one. And so I don't know why we're going to this one.
So the main reason that they did it, I think, is they change it for planeswalkers. And if they change it for planeswalkers, they have to change it for the legendary creatures. Like, there's only so many creatures. And this is based on stuff that Sam said in his article, which kind of helped to try to explain the changes. But, I mean, like, they're going to keep coming back to the original Lorwyn 5 characters. And, I mean, there's only so many. Like, there's Jace has 4 versions. Garrick, Liliana, Johnny, and Chandra have each seen their 3rd versions. Okay. 2 versions of Soren, Elspeth, Gideon, and Tezzeret. Like, the numbers are only going to go up over time. And, like, they're going to overlap. So they wanted to try to encourage you to play more versions or, you know, not just be punished for playing the wrong one or being last or whatever. It also apparently prevents them from reprinting certain cards like Fate's Fetters, right? So, like, all of the white or enchantment-based removal has all been, like, Oblivion Ring-style stuff where you have to exile it.
Right.
And that way, you know, because, like, if you play something that's going to prevent it from playing any of its abilities or basically doing anything except taking up space, then, like, it totally screws the other same of that card that's in your hand.
Right, right.
And so that was part of the problem as well. Also, it lets them create legendary lands again, which is something that, like, I guess is going to be interesting.
That's such a fucking bullshit answer. Like, what do you mean it lets them create it again? I know they said that, not you. But I mean, like, so they're not creating legendary lands anymore because both players don't get to play with it.
Yeah, they basically,
fuck off. On my dick.
It's been pretty clear that
my
they
one
don't,
legendary dick.
They don't like land destruction, right? Like, that's just how it is. And they, I guess they just found these situations undesirable for their gameplay expectations. Yeah. Right?
Like acidic slime being played on turn 3, 4, and 5 and then reanimated. Like, why don't they just ban that then? Like, yeah, it's just so retarded. Like,
it's one deck. It's a corner case. It's an all-in strategy.
What,
like,
I'm saying is, it's such a weak fucking argument to make that they like it allows us to make legendary lands again. Well, like you never had to stop doing that. And I would really like one of the big things with Wizards is, like, they always claim that they have the data. But they won't. But they're very secretive about all the data they have, right? And I mean, like, I don't really know why. Like, they're owned by Hasbro, and they're obviously the most successful and best card game ever. And that's not even like sarcasm or being facetious. Like, they are, right? Mm-hmm. And so, like, I can understand them being really secretive with their data, like 10 or 15 years ago, maybe even like 5 years ago. But, like, they always fucking do this garbage where they're like a year behind, or they fix things too late, or they just, like, don't understand what they're doing until, like, the last second. And then they say these statements like this, like, oh, this, you know, allows us to print legendary lands again. Well, like, you printed a legendary land in World Wake, Eye of Ugin, and it fucking sucked, and that's why people didn't play it. They didn't not play it. because when I played my Eye of Ugin, someone else played an Eye of Ugin, and then we both fucking cried. That's not why. Like, it just doesn't make sense. And like look at Gaea's Cradle. Oh man, no one's playing that in EDH or Legacy and Elf Ball or Casual or anything like that. That's never seeing any play because people hate it when you copy it. And then it dies. No, that's a fucking lie. That's not true. That's not a fact. So I'd love to see their data that says that this is the reason they can print legendary lands again. They weren't printing them before because people hate land destruction. You know,
they're not catering to us anymore.
People hate two mana land destruction. They print a red 5-mana land destruction spell every fucking set. Every set.
Because it's fair. They like
a legendary land. They don't print a legendary land every set. Print a fucking legendary land every set and then tell me that people aren't playing it because it's not because it's shitty. People aren't playing it because it's getting blown up by a different copy of that land.
Well, I think we're going to have this discussion after Theros comes out and see if it's still the same situation. Man.
And like, what a bunch of bullshit that's going to be. If you are correct and Theros is going to be full of legends, they're going to be full of legends. I am not looking forward to me playing a legend and you playing the same legend and every deck just having 4 copies of the most powerful legends.
I think
that just seems like cheap and weak. You know what I'm saying?
I agree. I think it feels for legendary permanents, right? Like the whole flavor behind it is that only one of these things exists.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So for the flavor, it feels kind of like, this is weak. Like, why do I have a Geistesteam Trap and you have a Geistesteam Trap?
Think about this from a, like, Umezawa's Jite, folks.
Right.
Yeah, you can't, like, Jite anymore.
No. No, it's a legendary permanent. Like, that's one of those cards. Like, talk about how degenerate that battle would be, you know?
Ugh. Yeah, that's the...
Yeah,
like... I do like changes like this, though. Because I like it when Wizards does like broad strokes that are gonna create like massive chaos. So this thing, like all the things that I don't know if Wizards thought about every legendary interaction with this new rule.
Yeah, I can guarantee you that they didn't.
Yeah, so like I can't wait to see the people who are smarter than me break this wide open.
Yeah.
It's already happening. Dark Depths and Vesuva?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just off another so reliquary trash. Or whatever. Like it's insane.
So, and like,
if Dark Depths, how does that work? Does it mean you make the token? No, right? Like, what does Vesuva do for Dark Depths?
Vesuva enters into play as a copy of the card.
Uh huh.
Yeah, so I don't think it comes into play with any counters on it.
Really?
So then you just choose to sacrifice that one and get a 20/20.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. Ask. Yeah, I got that one straight off the Michael Jacob Twitter feed. I can't take any credit for that.
Oh gosh, that's dirty.
Anyways, I think overall, so I agree with you, John. Like, I'm really excited to see how these rules impact design moving forward, because I think that they've obviously been done this way, and it has had a heavy influence on design. I think that it's going to be neat to see what comes out. I think that this is going to make Legacy miserable. Like, I just honestly straight up do. Like, I believe that the Esper Stoneblade Mirror, as grindy as it was before, is literally going to make me want to, like, peel wallpaper with...
Yeah.
Like...
And before this stupid rule change, Jace was $150 fucking dollars.
Yeah. Now you need twice as many Jaces.
Now you need twice as many... Not to mention that no one was playing Jace before because they hated when the legend rule affected it.
That happened... The 150 happened after...
Okay, what was it before 150?
100.
Oh my god, 100. Yeah, that's way less and shitty.
Okay. So what I'm saying is, like, I do like the fact that you could kill a Planeswalker and play another copy of it. Like, there were so many times I wanted to do that. Like, I got my Jace down to, like, one counter or something stupid. I'm just like, I want to just kill this thing with this Jace in my hand. I just want to re-up.
Yeah.
And, you know, so that's going to feel good.
I don't know.
Yeah, from a flavor standpoint, yeah, I don't know. Also, what's not going to feel good is them having a Jace.
Or 5?
Yeah. I don't know. Like, that's going to really not feel good. Because before, what one of the strategies you used to do is like, if I stick my Jace first, then they're out. They're locked out of Jace.
Yep.
But now it's like, if I stick my Jace first, then I tap out and they get to play their Jace, you know?
Think about red-green Tron in Modern with Karn. You don't have to worry about being first with Karn anymore. You can be second and exile their Karn.
I feel like too is like legends that have hexproof like Thrun and Geistentraff. Like it's not like that was. I felt like that was a legitimate way to get rid of them.
Yeah.
Like I felt like A, that was a good way to get rid of them, and B, I felt like it was legitimate. If somebody fucking magically creates a copy of me and then they can't coexist in the same time and space and then they blow up, right? That's fine. I was never fucking upset about that or thought like that was a stupid rule. And now I feel like if they put out any legends after this, they can't possibly be good.
You just like, have to consider the two sides of the board as two different times and spaces.
But what I'm saying is they're not because I'm fucking fighting you. If it's a different time and space, then I'm not fucking fighting you. Now I'm playing a video game solo.
All right.
You know, also, the thing that I'm interested in now is, like, I'm interested in seeing a really good legend. I dare them to print one. One that's like a big fat dick. The hardest dick of all time. Big titties. Just some fucking crazy, like a fucking Concorde jet. A rocket ship. Print it. Fucking print it. Print a fucking 8/8 for 3 mana with trample and haste. Do it.
Oh man.
Like it, because it doesn't matter if it's broken, because everybody will just play 4 copies of it, right? You have one, I have one. Fucking who cares? And also, like, if I can have as many copies as I want, then like, why? Like, now I don't have to think about how many copies of a legend I'm going to put in my deck for building purposes. You know, the general rule of thumb was you never put 4 in unless it's something, like, really super good, like Geistentraff. And then, like, you know, there was a reason that, like, you know, it was hard to cast or that it was legendary was seen as a drawback. Now it's not even a drawback because you just get to choose which one dies. Like, I don't see how they're going to make a really good aggressively costed legend that actually is worth playing in the first place now that you can just play them as much as you want, which was like a huge thing. Like that's a thing with planeswalkers. They want them to feel flavorful, right? They don't just want it to be a creature with really complicated rules text. They want it to do something. Well, how are you going to do that now that I can abuse that fucking potentially 4 times a turn?
Well, I mean, I think in the flavor sense of planeswalkers, and maybe this works with creatures too, is that when you're summoning the planeswalker again, you have to remove him from the current like time and space. You know what I mean? So you're just like resummoning, like or like summoning a different version of the planeswalker. You know?
That's what I'm saying. Like, it doesn't make any sense. Like, hey, John, you want a beer? You're like, yep. And then you're like, done your beer? And I'm like, hey, do you want another beer? And you're like, yeah. And I'm like, well, then you're going to have to leave and come back. Like, I can't.
That analogy is not great.
I can't. That's what I'm saying. It's not great. It's terrible.
It's not great.
That's what I'm saying. It doesn't make any sense. It makes
Well, what no doesn't sense make sense in that flavor is that other player gets to have the planeswalker. You know what I mean? If you get to upgrade this guy because you're making him go away and then making him come back, you know, then boom, like the other players shouldn't be able to play it, you know? I don't know. I don't really care. Like I said, from a gameplay standpoint, I want to see this thing get crazy.
Yeah.
And
I want to see it get crazy. And I want to see, like, which cards, like, spike in price and, like, you know, it's just going to be fun to watch all that. And, you know, I always like change. I always like to see it, you know.
I'm actually just disappointed that they're giving us this much notice. Like, hear me out. I'm not just being one of those, you know, I'm not doomsaying here. You know, I'm not complaining. I'm surprised they gave us this much notice on it. Because traditionally they've given us like zero notice for anything that is this sweeping, and then everybody pisses and moans about it.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm excited about this and I want to try this, but I don't really have to worry about it for like a month and a half. I don't know.
Yeah, the other thing about this is like when damage on the stack went away, that was a huge thing too, you know what I mean? Like we were all used to doing that, and then everyone's like, oh man, what are we going to do now?
Yeah.
But it's just like, whatever, you get used to it, and then, you know, I don't really care about flavor anyways, so I'm just like, yeah, whatever. Two guys to St. Trash, let's do this.
Let's do this, yeah. So anyways, I mean, it could have easily just been June 13th for me, and I would have been fine with it, but, you know, we got us extra time to try to figure it out and break it, so we'll see what happens. Can we talk about...
Other rule changes, wasn't there?
Oh, yeah. Holy shit, there's so many rule changes. This is actually one that I'm really interested in. Sideboard rule.
Yeah.
I'm really quite interested in this. Okay, so basically, here's what happens. Your main deck was 60 cards or more, and your sideboard was either 15 or 0 cards.
Yep.
With the new rule, you can still be 60 or more cards, but your sideboard is now up to 15 cards. You are also not required to swap cards between your main deck and sideboard on a 1-for-1 basis for games 2 and 3. As long as your main deck is 60 or more cards and your sideboard is no more than 15 cards, you're good. So, basically, I think the real reason they wanted to make this rule change was so that, you know, game 1, you bring in some cards from your sideboard, you shuffle up, you present your deck, and you realize, after game 1, sorry, you bring in some cards and you discover you presented 61 cards, and you just got a game loss. So yeah. I think the reason that they wanted to do it was to try to make that a little bit easier to police. But where things get interesting with this is I think it's really going to change the way that some people select their sideboard cards, because this really gives you now like the real, your deck is a 75 card deck feel. Because like if you want to play 61 post-board or 62, because you don't have, like, you've got all these great cards to bring in, but then ones that, you know, maybe are okay but not terrible, but you don't want to make the cut or whatever, you don't have to. So I think it's going to be pretty interesting to see how this all shakes out.
So your deck still has to be 60 cards, right?
Minimum, no. Yeah.
Minimum, yeah. Like, you can't have, like, a 40-card deck and a 15, like, you minimum 60 cards, and your maximum sideboard size is 15. So in theory, you can have like a 75 card deck and a.
I wish they would have made that 16, because so many times I have that 16th card in my sideboard.
So you just
like...
yeah. So you
and
play
a lot of
61
and a
cards.
Lot of new and a lot of new players, want to have 16 cards because they are dumb and they don't understand. Why they can't just have?
They are dumb.
They just don't. They don't understand why they can't have. Like they can't get. Like they can't let go of the fact that they can't have 4 of 4 cards. Like when you're sideboarding and you're new at sideboarding, people don't understand that sometimes you don't want 4 of a really niche card. You want 2 of it, right?
Oh,
so they
man.
just think a sideboard should be 4 4-ofs. And I've heard so many people talk about that.
Really, I never thought of it that way.
It just doesn't make any sense to them. That they can't just, that they have to go 4-4-4-3. They have no idea why they have to do that.
Hmm. So yeah, this is interesting. I don't man, so many rules changes. Was there other rules changes too?
Yeah.
For the record, I think also that's a stupid rule change. Mm-hmm. Keep going.
Okay. Indestructible is now a keyword.
Oh yeah, yeah. Who cares?
So, that's actually really relevant because. Now you've got
really
a situation. Sure, it is with turn and burn in the format. It's totally relevant. You can now turn and burn, in indestructible creature.
Right, that's super relevant because that's going to happen a lot in the first place.
You couldn't do that before.
No,
because it's not an ability. So when you make something lose all of its abilities, it's not losing indestructibility.
Really?
Yeah. So it's now a keyword.
Oh, who cares?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, who fucking cares?
The other thing is playing additional lands. This is more relevant for commander players. So, do you know you play like an Oracle of Maldaya or like
an
Azusa or whatever?
Yep,
yeah.
Yep.
So, the first land you play, you always say, this is my land off the Oracle?
Yeah.
Yeah. That doesn't work anymore. You now, as long as the Oracle's in play, you have 2 lands. So, let's just say you play a land and then you do something and then somebody kills your Oracle. You can't play another land.
No, that's not true. You still can.
No, you can't.
But the way that it works is that you can't increase the number of land drops you have by replaying an Oracle.
No, that's
like,
totally backwards.
Additional land drops don't, like, aren't cumulative from the same card anymore.
No, you're totally backwards.
All right, well, the example that they gave was that you play 2 lands with an Oracle of Maldaya, bounce it to your hand, replay it, and play a 3rd land. And now you can't do that.
What?
No. Okay. So here's the example. You start your pre-combat main phase while controlling Oracle. You have two land plays. You play a land. Then the Oracle is returned to your hand. So you now only have one land play that you can make for that turn, which you've already made. Okay? Because the Oracle's no longer in play, you still, so long as the Oracle's not in play, you're only entitled to make one land drop that turn. Okay? Yep. You then recast Oracle. You now have two land plays again. You can play a second land. Oh, wait. So you're half right.
Yep.
Yeah. So you don't get the third land play. But here's the other one. So, like, you start your pre-combat main phase while controlling Oracle. You have two land plays, so you play a land. Then Oracle dies during combat. You're back to one land play, and it's already been used. Previously, what you'd be able to do is you'd be able to, like, if Oracle's on the field, you go like, okay, so I'm going to play a land, and this is my Oracle land.
Yeah.
I still have my regular land
play. Which doesn't take
play.
Away from your regular land
play. Now,
they don't have that anymore. Now it's just you get X land plays per turn.
Yeah,
I guess the other question would be is, if you played two lands in your pre-combat, and then the Oracle got down,
no
and you played the Oracle again,
no
can
effect.
You play another land?
Well, I didn't think so, because that's what
so
this
either.
Says, but...
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yeah. What my friend is saying is you can't. My friend is saying, if you play two lands off Oracle, and then you, mana, and then upheaval,
yeah.
You can't play the Oracle again and then play another land.
Right, and I think it's because of the way that it's worded, but I'm not sure on that.
Interesting.
Yeah, which is kind of, like, crappy, because most of my EDH decks are turning into just land decks. So, like... My lands one is the Child of Lara deck with Maze's End and, like, Scape Shift and stuff, so...
Hey, so those are the rules. Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Did Prozac get your permission?
Oh, did that go up yet?
Yeah.
Yeah, he did. Did they call FM Hero?
Yep.
Yes!
Yep, and you got mentioned twice by name with a link to your Star City articles. In the first three sub-paragraphs.
That's sick.
Neat. So Adam Prozac took over FNM Hero for Star City Game.
Yep.
What?
Whoop, whoop.
Good to know.
Yeah, he did ask about that. And this was a little bit of a point of contention.
Well, yeah.
It was a point of contention not with me, but with some of the team members at Legit, because... It's reasonably, like, as Legit having, like, FNM Hero was huge for Legit. Like, there were a lot of people who visited because of that.
Uh-huh.
And it was a big, like, thing, you know? And so naturally you don't want, like, Star City Games taking the, like an article series that was very successful.
The brand, yeah.
The brand, you know? But, you know, I'm just like, whatever. Like, I don't own FNM Hero, right? It's a word, you know? Like, I wrote a great article series. I think a lot of people liked it. And if it kind of is like, it's very nice for somebody like Adam Prozac to take it and do something with it. It's because no one's doing anything with it now. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, for me, I feel like this really strengthens the Legit MTG brand. Because you're seeing, like, something that came from Legit, an idea, and it's being used on Star City, you know? And we're being credited for it, you know what I mean? And so, like, I like the idea that anytime someone takes this challenge, that it's called FNM Hero, you know? And that they're becoming the FNM Hero, because I want to see, like, everyone become an FNM Hero, you know? So, like, it's kind of like Like, I don't want to keep it to myself. Like, I want it to be something that enhances the Magic community, something that everyone can share in. So I'm happy that Adam Prozac is doing it, and I'm really happy that he's using the name FNM Hero.
Sweet.
What do you guys think about that?
Fuck them!
I don't know. I think you're a sucker if you didn't get paid for that.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Why?
No, I don't know. The fact that the, so here's the problem I have with this,
uh-huh.
is that they're hyperlinking you in the article to the articles that you wrote for them, and yeah. not to your FNM Hero series on Legit MTG, and you should actually send them an email and make them change it. And I think that's what you should do. I've been really gracious enough to donate the brand to you guys. The least you could do is link to my work and stop being dickbags. Thanks for asking. But that's just my opinion.
Yeah, I may ask about that.
Yeah.
But like, even so, I think I'm okay with this. Like, at the very beginning of FNM Hero, I don't know if you guys heard about this, but there was a guy with a blog. Did you guys hear about this? A guy with a blog named FNM Hero.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he had a blog named FNM Hero. And I had read the blog before. Somebody had sent it to me. And like, when I was picking the name for FNM Hero, I didn't think, oh yeah, I'm going to take this guy's blog name because it was sick. I just was like, just thinking of names for an FNM column, and FNM Hero popped in my head. Probably because I read his blog and like the name was stored in my mind. But it was when like I was reading a lot of Magic content because we were just starting Legit, you know? So yeah. I was like looking for writers like, man, I was reading like maybe 10 blogs a day, you know? So like when I started the column, the guy contacted me and was like, hey, you're stealing my name. Or like one of his friends is like, I don't appreciate you stealing my friend's blog name. And I'm like, what are you talking about? And he's like, this name, I sent you this blog like a month ago or like 3 months ago or something, and you're taking it, you know? And I was like, oh crap, like his blog name is FNM Hero. I'm like, yeah, but this is like a perfect name for my column, you know? So they were like telling me to change it. I'm like, look, dude, you guys took the name from like Guitar Hero, you know? I'm using this name because it's a good name. I'm sorry that your blog is named that, but all this is going to do is like send your blog more traffic. Cause when people search for FNM Hero, you know, based on the things that I'm talking about, they're going to find your blog and my website, you know?
Yeah.
So like, if I'm not going to get mad at, like, if I have the defense for this guy who basically had the name before me, you know, and I used it, then like, why am I going to get mad at Star City, who's using the name when I had it before them, you know?
Sure. And that makes sense.
It seems hypocritical. So like, for me, like I have the same approach I did when I used the name as my column name. You know, the column name is for everyone. And I just hope, my only hope is that Adam does a good job with it and that he writes a good column and that people enjoy it. And I think that Adam will. So I'm happy about that.
Cool. All right. That's fine. Good.
Sweet. Oh, man. I'm actually pumped about this. I can't wait to read his article.
So here's another one. You guys know that I'm doing that gunslinging, right?
Yeah, Joel Nidris?
Yeah.
Sketchbook Comics.
So for Sketchbook Comics, yeah. So I actually got an email from one of the guys that I met when I was down there. And one of the other stores in Niagara Falls is putting on a Grand Prix trial for Vegas on the Sunday afterwards. So you're asking probably, so what? Well, I'm not going to this because I can't make it. But one of the things that changed when they announced the new pro structure is that GPTs are now only giving out 2 buys. They felt that, you know, the higher number of GPTs being given out to the stores and the high volume of Magic players and, you know, giving out 3 buys was making the tournaments go long, and it was, you know, one reason after another. But basically, unfortunately, it makes the expected value at a GPT like that much lower. Because like, you can easily score 2 buys if you're grinding fairly regularly at PTQs or whatever. Like, why do I need to go and win a Grand Prix trial to get 3 buys? Or to get 2 buys, rather. So what these guys have done is they've put their money where their mouths are, and they've put together a Grand Prix trial that's worth going to. So on Sunday, June 9th, at the Sheridan next to Falls View Casino, and we'll have a link to this information in the show notes, it's a $30 standard event. First place will receive not only the 2 buys for Grand Prix Vegas, but they're also giving out round-trip air and hotel accommodations to Vegas for the Grand Prix.
That's pretty insane.
That's insane. So it's almost like a PTQ for the Grand Prix.
I missed it. Why are we promoting this? Like, is it because of the sick like price thing? Or?
Yeah. So I'm promoting it because I think that this is what a GPT should be.
Okay.
I think that a GPT for the event should also give out at least airfare to the event. I think that's awesome.
And yeah, I don't want to say I agree that I think that they should do that, but I think it's really cool of these people to do that, you know?
Yeah. And, I mean, they're still paying out cash for all the way down to fourth place. And, I mean, all the way down to top eight get cash, at least. Fifth through eighth get $60. Third and fourth get $100. Second place gets $300. That's not bad. And then, like I said, all the money really is going into the top spot, and the prizes are guaranteed regardless of attendance. So, if you guys are in the like Niagara Falls area and are considering going to GP Vegas or wanted to but couldn't afford it, this is one hell of a standard tournament to go and attend. Try your luck at that. But I wanted to mention it because it's just so awesome that that's the prize. That's just jaw-dropping.
I dropped my jaw and so did Kyle when he got that email. He's like, I wish I could go.
Yeah. So it's so for those of you TOs that are out there and you're thinking about this, this is the way to do it. This is the way to drop attention. This sort of thing will get you mentioned on the A-Team and exposed to thousands of listeners.
Well, I mean, I want to stay away from like just promoting everyone's tournament. You know?
No, I agree. But this one changed the game for me. Like when I looked at this and I thought, this is one hell of a prize. This is the right way to do a GPT.
But did it change the game as much as these rules changes?
Hmm? No, not close. Long term versus short term, probably not.
No, but this is pretty legit. If I could use another word.
Yeah. So
it's pretty legit, mtg.com.
Yeah.
You know.
But yeah, I was pretty happy with it. When I saw it, I was pretty shocked, amazed, and it's pretty sweet stuff. So yeah. Jay, you have something else you want to mention?
Oh yeah. I almost forgot about this.
I wouldn't let you.
Yeah. Man, that's why you guys are the best. Okay, so a little while ago, I talked about sign-in blood life pad counters, and I showed some people them, and I, you know, previewed and talked about how great they were, and I gave some people that were going to a PTQ a bunch on behalf of my friend Scott, who owns them, or owns that company, I guess, and everybody loved them, and they're really great, and I really think that they're really good. I still use mine, and I really want to help them succeed. So, the A-Team and signandbloodlife.com, I think, is the website.
.com.
You have to spell it K-A-M.
Like, how do you spell that cam?
Yeah, signandbloodlife.com. They have just created a new... Who's in house in there? What's that called? A playmat, and it looks badass. It's like a Ouija board, but it's like a black mat with like red blood and everything. It's fucking badass. And then they have this sweet t-shirt with like some weird kind of cross design. I don't know what that's all about, but you could go on the website. You could say, hey, man, the A-Team sent me, and what's up?
It sounds like they're a little bit confused, man. A Ouija board and a cross. They're going to have like...
It's not confusing.
Yeah, man, because, like, Ouija boards are satanic, bro, and then you have a cross there? What's up with that? You can't mix the two. You can't cross the streams. You can't cross
the streams?
They're crossing the streams, man.
Shut the fuck up. You can cross streams.
Maybe it's a gothic cross instead of a religious cross.
It is. Yeah.
So there you go.
Yeah.
The gothics can't take the cross. They can't do that.
So, yeah. So we're going to do a little giveaway contest. So, it's going to include a bunch of fucking sweet shit. Let me try to find the picture of it here. It's like 3 Sign and Bud life counters, a t-shirt, and what did I say earlier? A playmat. Yeah. A playmat.
That seems pretty hefty, man.
We're going to ship it out to you. And, yeah, it's pretty sweet. So, all you have to do to enter is, and I wanted you guys to have to do something, you know, harder than this, but Scott, he's all for just giving it away free shit.
Wait, let me guess. What they have to do...
What do they have to do?
They have to sign something with blood and then send it in.
Yeah. Die, Bart, yeah. Die.
Yeah, so cut your finger open and get one of those quills, like the little feather quills, you know?
Yeah.
Dip it in that blood right there and sign something.
Yeah, but it has to be a feather quill. If it's not, we'll know.
Yeah, and plus, I'm not signing any cards in blood, just so you guys know.
No, if you ask him to do that on the legit MTG website, he has to. And if he doesn't, you can give him a bad review. No,
don't do that.
You can give him a bad review. You could say, I requested, John Medina said that I could request something special, and then I did, and then he didn't do it.
Quick update about that. Somebody asked me to do this. Draw a hand on an index card, and in the hand, put high five.
High five.
I took a life pad and I traced my hand with a permanent marker on there.
Yeah.
And then I put high five in there. So I hope they like that.
That's crazy. What a weird quest.
It was weird. I like came up to the office. I'm like, I need an index card. And Nicole's like, for what? And I'm like, I need to draw a hand on it and put high five. And she's like, huh?
I'm like,
don't worry, fan request, you don't understand this.
You don't understand. Shut up. Shut up, bitch. So anyway, it's a t-shirt, the size of your choosing. I mean, if you're a big fat guy, probably will get you a big fat guy shirt. If you're a little tiny guy, I'll probably get you a big fat guy shirt. You get three spellbook life counters. They got a secret pocket in the back, too. And just FYI, nobody knew about the secret pocket. We found it. And then you get this sweet, it's called an Oracle playmat. So it's not actually a Ouija board. It's like a sweet Oracle playmat, which is badass.
It looks like a Ouija board.
No, it looks sweet. And I won't have you sullying up the name, so shut it. So all you gotta
this is the work of warlocks, do, so you guys just be careful, all right?
Yeah, so Craig Wesco, you can't win this prize, okay?
you can win the Pro Tour. Though.
Yeah, all you gotta do to enter the contest is leave a comment on this episode of the A-Team. It can be like anything, like, hey, my name's Bob, what's up? Or it could be like, Jay is a fucking idiot, the rules changes are the best, and also 14-card sideboards are sweet. Could be whatever you want. Whatever we want. And then we're going to choose a winner, probably randomly. But I mean, like, if you're being a piece of shit, we're probably randomly not going to choose you.
Randomly not choose you.
So, you know, FYI. And then you're going to win this sweet fucking thing. So I want everybody to go there, go to signandbloodlife.com, and check it out. And yeah.
Quick note about Sign and Blood. We did a summon legend on the owner. So that's basically where Heather interviewed him.
Oh,
and there's a lot of info in that interview. It's pretty
check
cool.
It out.
Yeah, lots of pictures. And
I even read that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You read it? You read it?
I read it.
You read it? So check that out at legitmtg.com. If you want to check that out. Also, since we're in like advertising mode and we're just advertising everybody's stuff tonight.
What?
Yeah, I feel like we're a commercial. We drop shout-outs to go with commercials. We already did. We're too deep.
Not.
All right, so here's a little commercial. Gerard Fabiano.
Oh, God, I did this today.
Oh, no.
He intends to run for King of the Nerds, the TV show.
I don't even know what that is.
It's a TV show, and it's called King of the Nerds.
Okay, and, cool. Got me.
Okay, and basically they have... Nerds like compete to see who's the king of the nerds. Okay.
Okay.
And I don't know much about the show. I don't watch that garbage.
Cool. But yeah. Anyways, fuck it.
How cool would it be to have a Magic player on the King of the Nerds? There's been no Magic player, which is first of all like crazy because like how can they even have a contest for King of the Nerds when there's like no Magic players involved? Like, come on. So since nobody else.
Sorry, are they giving away anything?
If you win?
No, like, do they have a contest?
Ooh, King of the Nerds?
Yeah, can I win anything by you telling me this story?
No.
Then shut the fuck up!
Dude, we got a rally behind Gerard Fabiano so he could be king of the
Nerds. I hope that guy loses.
Okay, then let's pick someone else, and then they should try to become
a... Yeah, Joshua Lemish.
You know who is a better? You know who's a better king of the nerds? Alex Hayne. Alex Hayne's probably a really good nerd.
Holy, have you ever seen that guy? For sure he's king of the nerds. He looks like a lesbian.
He plays chess.
He does play chess, and he has glasses, and he's a little kid.
Magic. Yeah, and he's Caucasian. Yeah.
Oh, man, king of the nerds.
You got, like, Gerard Fabiano, who's looking all smooth and like,
and like, and like, imagine this, like, hey babe, how's it going? And like, who are you? And like, oh man, I'm just Gerard Fabiano, king of the nerds. And then she'd be all like, oh my god, and like, that sounds hot as fuck. But like, if this, like, hey, how's it going? And like, who the fuck are you? And like, I'm Alex Hayne. That's
I
not
want
no
a magic
that's,
tournament called the Pro Tour.
Professional.
Maybe you heard of it? Nope, never heard of it.
Yeah, that's not. Yeah,
nope. Maybe we could play some chess. We could play some chess.
Yeah.
In my pillow fort.
Let's play some strip bullet chess. Hayne.
Hi, my name is Alex Hayne. I go by Insane Hayne by my close friends.
Oh, God.
I'm insane in the membrane. Yeah, so go to signofbloodlife.com.
Oh,
also,
man.
there's a contest there to win fucking altered dual lands and shit. Check it out.
Sweet.
Check it out.
All right. That's awesome. So we did it again.
What did we do?
We ran 2 hours.
Ah, fuck. You know what?
How am I supposed to get sleep, guys? Huh?
I don't know. But I'm
Am I supposed to build ramps over now? Who am I supposed to build ramps on? Oh, man. Just cut the show. Just end it.
just end it.
Oh, man.
Damn you, KYT. Damn you.
Come on, Jay, please.
What?
You gotta do this song if you know the lyrics.
Did you put a thing in there?
Oh, this thing's come crazy.
Okay, there's the instrumental version, and then there's
nothing
the...
at all. Today I'm feeling kinda lazy.
Oh my god.
So I'll be sleeping it all.
Oh my god, you're ruining Soul Decision.
And it's kind of like a love song.
Man, you're really good at this.
Good old-fashioned love song. Then she decides that the dogs, they belong inside. It's a never-ending ride you're taking. I can decide for you. Hey, it's kind of like a love song.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty good. Pretty good. I can't top that.
Else, babe. Yep.
Where did it go?
That was for you, KYT. Just for
that
you.
That was really good. I was actually like super impressed by how good that sounded. I was like close to it. That was crazy.